Welcome to Moolala, Money Made Simple on SiriusXM. Here's your host, Bruce Sellery.
Hello, I'm Bruce Sellery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Coming up on the program this week, you likely have someone in your life who's an avid video game player. Maybe it's you. Now, the world of gaming and esports just got bigger. You can invest in the industry through a new exchange-traded fund called Hero. Raj Lala, president and CEO of Evolve ETFs, is here to talk about it. Then gamers aren't the only ones getting an ETF made specifically for them. Vegans are too. The vegan ETF meets the values of those who choose not to eat or use animal products. Claire Smith is the CEO of Beyond Investing. She'll be here to tell us more about that. And what's the difference between your will and your wishes? Sue Jakes is a consultant and former death investigator. She created the RIP Bucket List Worksheet. She'll take us through it and how you can use it to figure out your final wishes. Plus, financial stress affects everyone, but it may not affect men and women in the same way. Stephanie Wolf is a money coach and founder of the Wolf Collective. She joins us to talk about how financial stress impacts women and how they can lessen the strain. Plus, Robert Price, founder and CEO of Bode, is here to talk about this new low-cost real estate platform. All that's ahead. Let's get started. Death is not an easy topic to discuss, especially when it's your own. We talk a lot about the will, but less about the other stuff, the wishes. This is where the RIP bucket list comes in. Sue Jakes is a former death investigator. She's now a consultant in the areas of professionalism and civility. And she came up with something called the RIP bucket list. It's a worksheet. It's a way of thinking. And it helps us distinguish between your will and your wishes. She joins us now from Calgary, Alberta. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Bruce.
What is the RIP bucket list, and how does it differ from the movie which starred Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman?
Two very different things in a way, but you know, we all, or at least most of us, have a bucket list for our lives, right? Like all these things we want to accomplish before we're either too old or too sick to do them. But very few of us have given much thought to what we would like our final farewell to look like. We leave it up to chance, or we leave it up to our next of kin, because most of us, quite frankly, think we're going to live forever and that it will never happen to us, that we have to deal with these details about our death. We're young and active and healthy.
You are someone who has a lot of experience in this area, given that you used to work as a forensic death investigator. How does that past inform how you think about death and people talking about death?
It has informed every decision I make. I was a forensic death investigator for nearly 20 years, and I learned through that experience that, you know, I hate to be the one to break it to us all, but we're all going to die. And we're not all going to live long enough to, you know, die peacefully with our loved ones surrounding us. And what I saw through that experience is that so many people are unprepared to have this conversation. They just don't know how to talk about it. So what I did is, after watching so many families and loved ones go through these circumstances, because the deaths that I investigated were mostly unexpected, unnatural, and very often violent, I realized that maybe I could find a voice to help people in these times of terrible need, to create a way to ease their transition, not only for themselves, but for other people. In fact, I call this my journey from corpses to carpe diem.
You do have a way with the turn of phrase. Now, I want to walk through the worksheet, but I'll highlight now that listeners can actually go download the worksheet at suejakes.com. That is JACQES.com. Is that correct, Sue?
It's actually, you can download it in two places. One is the RIPBucketList.com. That'll take you directly to a download. Or Sue Jakes, that's JACQUES.com.
Good, I spelt it right. I like that you've got an even better URL. So if they had it right in front of them, what would they see?
Well, it's a really, really simple two-page download. It's called the RIP Bucket List Worksheet. And what it is, it's something that we can go through quietly by ourselves or with people we love that will help us clarify, capture, and convey our final wishes. so there are three steps to the RIP bucket list. The first is R, to resolve what your personal preferences are surrounding your death. And so to work through that first step, there are three questions that I encourage people to think about. And those questions are, number one, do you want to be an organ or tissue donor? This is a simple question. A lot of us think about it, but we don't share it with other people. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, again, when I ask people that question after their loved one died, so many of the family or loved ones of the person who had died had no idea. They did not know what those wishes were. And we don't have a lot of time, you know, in those circumstances to wait for people to gather together and make those decisions. So that's the first question I encourage people to ask themselves. The second is, do you want to, your body to be buried, cremated, donated to medical science or some other version of disposal? It's something that people are uncomfortable talking about, and it's a question that has to be answered really promptly after we die. And the third question is, what kind of service do you want? Do you want a traditional funeral? Do you want a wake? Do you want some people are now having what is called living funerals, where they're actually present if they're terminally ill and can say their final farewells themselves. And of course, some people want no service at all. But to put that, just that one question in perspective, I'd like everyone to consider this. We have about 6 to 12 months to plan a wedding. And we're joyful and we're in love and we're excited and we've got all the time in the world and it feels like time is racing by. But when it comes to a funeral, we have maybe 6 to 12 days to make these huge decisions. So that first step, that resolution, resolve, the R of RIP, is where we answer those questions for ourselves.
That's really helpful. All right. Then the I is inform. So this is no good if it's only written on a piece of paper that you store where no one can find it. You need to tell people.
Yeah, exactly. We have to tell the important people in our lives, and that could be anybody from, you know, the next of kin to your executor. I call them the VIPs in our lives. We have to let them know what those decisions are. And if it's awkward, which it is for a lot of us, to bring up the topic, here's a couple of suggestions that might help. Number one, you could, in conversation, refer to an obituary that you read in the paper. I don't know how many people still read obituaries. But
I do. I'll read every day.
Yeah, I think they're so fascinating. So you could talk about that with the family as something that really got you thinking about your own demise. Or you could maybe come home from a memorial service or a funeral and let your family or friends know that that got you to thinking about what kind of service you would like for yourself. Or three, you can always blame me.
Yes. I heard that Sue Jakes lady on the Moolala show.
Yeah, and she got me to thinking, so I downloaded this thing and here it is. I've figured it all out.
And then the third part is P, put it in writing.
Exactly. Again, talking about it is one thing, but if it's not in writing, it doesn't matter. So you need to document your decisions and share them with your next of kin. As you said, this is not a will. We're not talking legalities here. We're talking about wishes. And, you know, if you need guidance, you can ask your clergy or the funeral director or someone in your family who may have some wisdom and experience under their belt. And keep in mind, even if you write it down, you can always change your mind. This is not written in stone. You can always revoke and rewrite your RIP bucket list to serve your needs, because as we age or if we get ill, our philosophies may change, and it's okay to change.
We're talking about this from the perspective of ourselves. There is also the perspective of our loved ones, and they may be loved ones who are quite a bit older than us, who will predictably die between now and 20 years from now. If you're already 105, you may not have another 30 years in you. Mm-hmm. How do you broach that with the people that you love from a place of love in a way that doesn't have them feel like you're, you know, just itching to get at your inheritance?
It's hard. It can be very, very challenging. Some people in our community, our seniors, our elders, are very uncomfortable talking about death. So, again, the suggestions I had earlier about bringing it up over a more casual conversation is one way to do it, but also to speak from the heart and the soul and to speak with love. because as our parents age, or as we age, sometimes things like memory and cognitive function starts to go as well. And so to have these conversations based on love is how we can begin moving forward. It is not going to be easy. And I'd like to share a quick example, Bruce, of a circumstance that can happen. And let's say, for example, you grew up in the prairies. Your family lived on a farm, and you lived there your whole life, and then off you go to university on the West Coast. And you find the love of your life there, you partner with one another, and life goes on, and you've never had to talk about your wishes. And then suddenly and unexpectedly, you're still a young person, and something happens and you die suddenly. Well, here's what you can expect to see happen. Your family will very likely want your remains to return home to the farm in the prairies and have a traditional service that they're used to having in your family history, whereas your partner may have decided that they wanted to have you cremated and your ashes spread at sea.
Mm.
This is not going to be an easy conversation at that time of grief. So having these conversations in advance both ways, either you with your own personal wishes or finding out what your parents and loved ones' personal wishes are, can avoid that grief. That grief-stricken decision-making that is not easy, even at the best of times.
Thank you for providing us all with a catalyst, Sue. We appreciate it.
Of course.
It is called the RIP Bucket List. Its creator is Sue Jakes. It is available on her website. Or, Sue, the other URL is?
TheRIPBucketList.com.
Excellent. Sue Jakes joined us from Calgary, Alberta.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Veganism is on the rise. Some adherents are actively looking for ways to reduce their carbon footprint, and some have strong values around animal welfare. We've got vegan burgers becoming much more common, vegan cosmetics, vegan leather. But now there is a vegan exchange-traded fund. Claire Smith is the Chief Executive Officer of Beyond Investing. She's here to tell us more about the first vegan ETF on the New York Stock Exchange, ticker VEGN. She joins us from Geneva, Switzerland. Hello there.
Hi. How are you today, Bruce?
The index starts with the broad universe of S&P 500 companies, but then picks out, it excludes firms that don't adhere to the criteria. How does that work? What is the criteria?
Well, the criteria are primarily around animal exploitation, and that includes using any animal for food or clothing, using animals in animal testing, using animals in sport and entertainment. So a wide range of animal exploitation, and also include some companies whose business models are geared towards supporting those industries which are directly exploiting the animals too. So we're looking at the entire value chain. Outside of that, we care about the environment as well. We're concerned about climate change, which obviously affects the natural world greatly. And so we've added some more exclusions around fossil fuel, companies within that industry, banks, for instance, that are heavily supporting that industry, plastic pollution. So, yes, we have quite a wide range of exclusions there, which are mostly around animals and the environment.
I took a look through the top holdings, and I got to tell you, I was surprised by the three biggest ones, Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook. Why are they so heavily weighted?
They're heavily weighted because what we're trying to do is to provide people with an alternative to what would be the default to address the to invest in the U.S. stock market, which would be the S&P 500 index. Those are large stocks in our index because, like the S&P, we are anchored more towards a market cap weighting. And in essence, if it's large in the S&P, then it will be amongst the largest stocks in our index as well, provided that we include it. So those are included, and they're amongst the largest stocks in the S&P, so they are amongst the largest in our index. But I would point out that out of the 35 top stocks in the S&P 500, we are excluding 20 of them. So more than 20 of them drop out of our index because of our exclusions. And that's actually around 20% of the entire market.
it's an important distinction to think of as top down and then you exclude versus building up, you know, from companies that are primarily in the business of vegan products, because there aren't that many of them. Beyond Meat is one that I know. It's publicly traded. We've been talking about it a lot in Canada because it its products have been picked up by some of our fast food chains here. Is it in the ETF?
Yes, it is, because in actual fact, we are doing some proactive selection from the mid caps. What we find is that because of our because of the exclusions, primarily being in certain areas like the consumer sector, obviously the energy sector, what we're looking at, what we're doing is looking below the 100 to see if there may be some good replacements in those smaller companies. And Beyond Meat is one of them. It's still a mid-cap stock. And so it is in our index in a small weighting. And because the index, the ETF tracks the index, it is in the ETF.
If you were doing a sales presentation on the vegan ETF and you couldn't read the room, what would the pitch be? Is it a head-oriented pitch, like these stocks perform better because of the choices they've made values-wise? Or is it a heart-oriented pitch that, you know, you're supporting a better world? Where on the, I'm sure it's a mix of both, but where on the spectrum do you think you would focus?
Well, I would certainly say that we are investing for a kinder, cleaner and healthier world. But I think that is a world that everybody would prefer to invest in. What I would say to people is, imagine a world where our exclusions outperform, where it's more dirty, it's more full of fossil fuel, it's more heavily covered in pesticides, where there are fewer forests because of the deforestation needed to supply animal feed to feed the factory farmed animals, where antibiotics don't work because we've increased antibiotic resistance to resistant diseases. So I actually think those are pretty severe investment risks that, that nobody really wants to see a world like that. And if we are moving towards a more highly regulated world, where, for instance, there may be a carbon a price on carbon, where there may be controls on fossil fuels, maybe where there may be greater regulation potentially on the waste created by factory farms. Those are certainly threats to those businesses. And that is something that could cause those stocks to underperform. So we're glad that we don't have those exposures as well.
Can you tell me about some of the more complicated ethical discussions that you might have had? I mean, I think about financial services companies. They're on your list, the Visas and the MasterCards of the world. These aren't exactly Habitat for Humanity kind of companies. How do you reconcile some of those things? Because it's not hard and fast, super. I mean, with some of them, sure. You're not going to have McDonald's in there because they serve beef. But some of them would seem to be in a gray zone.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. We did have to develop a series of policies and consider the metrics and the degree of involvement that was, I won't say acceptable, but was tolerable, and at what point it was unacceptable. One example that I've sometimes tossed out is in the airline stocks. We decided not to allow in a company which is advertising itself as a transporter of trophies, hunting trophies. So that would be, do you see, that would be just a bit over the line in terms of, you know, promoting itself as the place to go if you want to bring your hunting trophies back home, which is a very controversial topic at the moment, obviously.
Go ahead.
In terms of some of these service providers, we are comparing their business models versus other business models in the same industry. So let's say in the real estate area, we have removed companies that are primarily in laboratories. So their real estate is mainly around kind of laboratory areas. And that would be because of animal testing, because undoubtedly they are renting their facilities to companies that are involved in animal testing. So that would be one area. And in the banks, we have analyzed or used using data that we have found around the balance sheets of banks and the assets that are supporting fossil fuels, so that, they're lending to fossil fuels, etc., and avoided those banks who are A, high, and not reducing their exposure to this, again, very controversial area.
One last question before we go. I have covered a lot of these niche ETFs for years, ones that focus on gender diversity or esports or pets, but often the administrators see a niche and they want to focus on a niche. Is this personal for you?
Oh, heavens, yes. I've been vegetarian or vegan. So I started vegetarian, then went vegan some 42 years ago.
Wow.
So, yes, it is. And my two co-founders are in and directors of the business, together with our salesperson in the US, are all vegan as well. So in terms of the company setup, yes, it's definitely a vegan company creating investment products for vegans, other vegans.
That's fantastic. Claire Smith, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Claire Smith is the Chief Executive Officer of Beyond Investing. She was here to talk about the first vegan ETF on the New York Stock Exchange. Stay with us. Coming up next, women and financial stress. Stephanie Wolf, money coach and founder of Wolf Collective Wealth, talks about the causes and some of the solutions. And later, Robert Price joins us to talk about Bode, a new online platform that promises to make it easier and cheaper to buy and sell your home. You can listen to Moolah La whenever, wherever. Just subscribe to the show on your podcast platform and write us a review while you're there. Stick around. We'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Everyone gets stressed. If you're not stressed on occasion, you're probably dead, or at least dead inside. Did you know that money is the number one cause of stress for many Canadians, if not most Canadians? And it's even more so for women. That stress can impact you both emotionally and physically. Stephanie Wolf is an accredited financial counselor and founder of Wolf Collective Wealth, a boutique firm that focuses on financial planning and wellness specifically for women. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
Thank you for being here. Financial stress, of course, it can cause health issues and lead to illness and all that kind of stuff. But give us a bit of a flavor for what that looks like. How does that evolve?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It's actually financial problems can be a major contributor to health complications. Women in particular, they're four times more likely to lose sleep or suffer from headaches because of money issues. It can cause depression and anxiety. It can lead to weight loss and weight gain. And if it's gone unchecked for many, many years, like if you're living with chronic stress for a long period of time, it can cause chronic inflammation. And Health Canada is now saying that that chronic inflammation can actually lead to life-altering illness. So it's something that I think we need to address. I think it's something that's a very serious matter, especially for women.
This is something you're hugely passionate about. And in fact, I would say is one of the reasons you founded your company. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely correct.
So why do you think women tend to find money more stressful than men?
Yeah, I think there's actually a few reasons for that. Some of the more common ones is that, you know, there is still continues to be a wage gap. So women, on average, earn less than men. They also spend less time in the workplace, so accumulating those funds over time. And what's challenging is that they actually live longer, so on average, than men. So they actually need more to retire. There's also a lack of confidence that women have seem to have a little bit more about when it comes to their financial situation than men do.
And we don't talk about it. Do you think that's more challenging for women than for men, the fact that this cultural taboo is so present?
It is present. It's ingrained in us. It's societal. It's cultural. I think that women just don't talk about it. They would rather talk. I think there's a statistic. They would rather talk about their funeral than talk about money. And that's an issue, because if you're not going to, you know, have the confidence to bring it up, if you're struggling, you've got chronic stress around it, but you're unsure, you feel guilt or shame, and you don't know where to turn to, it's going to continue to cause problems in your life.
What are some common misconceptions that women may have when it comes to money?
Well, I think one of the misconceptions, and this is actually a statistic I have, there's over half of women in Canada don't think that they have enough money to invest. And I believe it's something at 74% in the U.S. for U.S. listeners.
Really? And when you say not enough to invest, like not enough to deserve the services of a financial advisor?
Yes.
Specifically?
Specifically of to work with a financial advisor.
In your mind, does that connect to some of the stats that we've seen on a female's reticence to apply for a job in which they don't have all the qualifications, whereas a dude's like, I'm amazing. I should be president of the company.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. Not feeling that they can tick off all of the boxes. And I don't know, you know, what imaginary numbers or constraints that women are envisioning that they don't have enough to actually work with a financial planner. But I say, you know, everybody is worthy. I don't care if you're working with a money coach, a financial planner, financial advisor. The first step is to actually work with somebody and get your finances on track.
You also note that some women see investing as akin to gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
That actually, you know, I worked at BlackRock for many years and we did the Investor Pulse survey time and again. And this is not just actually for women, it's also for men. This perception that when you put your money in the stock market, that it's very easy to lose. And I think that for women, that was more akin to gambling and there was a stronger correlation to risk with that. And that was frightening. Mm-hmm. But really, it's about breaking those, you know, misperceptions. That's not what it's about. That's not what happens. If you understand what you're investing in and you know what you're doing, it's not akin to gambling at all. It's the really, you know, you either invest or you save, and you're not growing your wealth by saving it. You need to grow your wealth by investing.
So how do they get started? I mean, we certainly have a lot of listeners for whom this show is a way in. It's something that they can do while they go for a walk or drive in their car. They can get themselves a bit more informed. What are the things that you believe will make the biggest difference for women in particular to get a better handle on their money?
Well, I think the first thing is not to put too much pressure on yourself. I think it's important to start small. You know, build your confidence. Just get familiar with some of the industry terms. Pick up a book. You know, I would say maybe Moolala is a great place
great
to
suggestion.
Start,
Love
right,
that
Bruce?
Suggestion.
There you go. Another place is to even talk to your employer. You know, ask them if there's any resources available that they can, you know, reach out and get some help with their finances. But a good one that I love is knowing exactly what your short and long term money goals are. Mm. And a good way to do that is with the SMART method. And I'm sure you're familiar with the SMART
method.
I'm
smart.
You're smart.
I'm very smart. Smart. Mm.
So making sure those goals are specific, they're measurable, actionable, relevant, and time-bound. Mm. So as you go through those goals, really be thoughtful and intentional about what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Just before we go, I want to ask you about Wolf Collective Wealth. So in the financial space, there are full-service financial advisors, there's robo-advisors, there's fee-for-service financial planners, there's money coaches, there's online programs. There's about 12,000 ways that you can come at this big question of how to get a handle on your money. Tell us about what you're trying to provide. What's the specific part of the market that you're focused on?
Yeah, my goal, I really take a holistic look at a woman's financial wellness. So I'm a money coach, but I'm also a financial educator. So I'm passionate about helping women reach their goals by their financial money goals. And so I create financial plans to help them get there.
Stephanie Wolf, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce.
Stephanie Wolf is with Wolf Collective Wealth. And later, she will return to the show to go through the Moolala questionnaire. But next, Evolve ETF's Raj Lala tells us about a new gaming and esports exchange-traded fund called Hero. Whoever said we don't need another hero? Was that Tina Turner? Okay, I hope he never hears that song. Now, if you want to join in on the conversation, you can follow me at Bruce Selry on Twitter, Bruce Selry Moolala on Facebook, or you can meet me on Fortnite. Kidding, that'll never happen. I don't play. Stick around. We'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Total video game sales have now exceeded something like $40 billion. whoa, it is kids, it is teens, it is adults spending countless hours in front of a screen and increasingly participating in esports, a form of organized video game competition that has also been growing leaps and bounds. You can now play the games or invest in the playing of the games. There is now a gaming ETF, exchange-traded fund. Its ticker is HERO, H-E-R-O. Raj Lala, president and CEO of Evolve ETFs, joins us now to tell us more about it. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Why do we need an esports ETF? Why did you launch HERO?
Actually, it's a great question. It was something that I asked myself probably about 8 or 9 months ago when a few people brought up the concept to me, because I tended to kind of think about e-gaming very similar to the way it was when I was growing up, which is, you know, you go and buy a cartridge, you plug it into the console, and away you'd go, and it would effectively stop the revenue streams for the gaming manufacturer. But fast forward to today, and, you know, these companies are obviously letting you upload the games for free, many of them. Where they're generating revenue streams is from the in-app purchases, or if you play games like Fortnite, it's from the skins, from the boosters, and things like that. But then on top of that, many of these gaming companies have actually created an entire ecosystem of ancillary revenue streams, whether it be from those in-app purchases, whether it be from creating leagues for people to compete in, or whether it be from putting on events with big prize pools. And then you start to take a closer look at the entire viewership of the e-gaming space. I mean, I never thought in my lifetime that stadiums would get filled with people watching other people compete on a video game.
Who's your customer, your consumer research source? Do you have like a 13-year-old on staff at Evolve at all times who you can watch and wonder as they play this stuff?
Well, I'll tell you, that was the other thing. You know, I mean, originally my thought was anybody with a teenage child that actually games will probably know how many times the kid has borrowed their credit card and recognize the potential revenue stream. But when you actually dig a lot deeper, you start to see that, you know, it does transcend the typical stereotype that we have of the teenager gaming. I've got a lot of 45-year-old friends who wake up on a Saturday morning and hop online and compete in an e-sport with their friends. So gaming,
you got a lot of friends who ignore their children. Jeez.
for a few hours. But when you think about the numbers, I mean, worldwide there are 2.2 billion gamers, and that would be defined as anybody that spends 6 hours or more per week playing a game. And that means that that's like a third of the entire world's population.
These games are largely unknown to me, as are the companies that make them. I was looking through the top holdings, and there were really no names that I would know. How come the ETF does not include Intel, which is a chip maker, HP, which is hardware, AMD chips? Like, why none of the names that we might know and that are large cap?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we put together thematic ETFs, and this is obviously a thematic ETF, one of the things that we try to provide investors with is a pure play exposure to that specific sector or subsector. When you start to take a look at companies like Microsoft or Google or Intel, companies that actually have some level of involvement in gaming, but it's such a small portion of their overall revenue, we don't think that that actually provides investors with the exposure they're looking for when they're buying an e-gaming ETF. So the kinds of companies that we do have in the portfolio, some of them would be recognizable, would be companies like Nintendo, companies like Activision Blizzard, companies like Electronic Arts. Those would be some that anybody that's played a game in their history or in their life would probably be somewhat familiar with some of those types of names. But those are pure play companies that are just focused on either gaming manufacturing or also the entire ecosystem surrounding the business. So you would never see us create a FANG ETF, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google ETF, because our view is that you probably already have enough exposure to those types of companies.
In a traditional equity fund.
Yeah.
Or ETF.
Got it.
Yeah. How are you thinking about valuations in this sector? I mean, they can be very, very high, but they can be justifiably high if growth is really, really strong. What's your sense for where this is in the cycle?
Yeah, so first of all, we don't apply any active methodology to this ETF. It's pure index-based,
yep.
So it's pure rules-based, utilizing a classification system. So if you are classified under e-gaming, then you make it into our portfolio. So we don't provide a view necessarily on, you know, tilting more towards undervalued companies versus overvalued companies. We let the market decide what the valuation is for those companies. When I look at the amount of eyeballs in this space right now, and when I think of the ancillary business lines beyond the entire ecosystem, but also sponsorship rights, media rights. You know, the one game that I play on a somewhat...
Don't say Candy Crush. Don't say Candy Crush. Your cred goes to the down the drain.
No, I actually will play once in a while NHL 2K. And what I found really interesting about that game, and I've been playing that for probably 10 years now, and I got the newer version. And I don't know if you've ever played it, but in the past, when you looked at the boards around the arena of the ice, it would always be these fake companies that would be the logos there.
Right.
Now it's real companies. Now you've got Adidas there. Because companies like Adidas, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, all these kind of companies are recognizing there's a lot of eyeballs in this space. And when you're trying to promote your brand, obviously you want to maximize the number of eyeballs on it. So it's definitely, you know, changing a lot. So to answer your question a little bit more directly, when I look at the valuations of this business and I think about the future potential of all of those ancillary business lines, I think it's actually quite cheap. Mm. And then when you look at, you know, how these companies have become so intelligent in terms of driving their games through mobile apps, but also generating revenue per user. I'll give you a great example. The average revenue per user on the game Fortnite is approaching $100 per year.
Wow.
That is four times more than the average revenue per user using Google or using Facebook. Now, Facebook and Google obviously have a lot more users than the total number of users of Fortnite. But what I like to see is how these companies are generating revenue on a user basis.
Where is Canada in all of this? Do Canadian companies play much of a role or any role in the publicly traded game that you're tracking?
Not right now. We don't have any Canadian positions. There is a company called EGLX, which is a big gaming conglomerate that may eventually make it into our fund. You have to have a minimum $100 million market cap, and you have to trade $2 million a day from a volume perspective. So they haven't. But one thing I would say is the gamer population in Canada is proportionately higher than other parts of the world. I think, this is my theory, that part of that is because of the climate, because from November until March, it can be so cold outside that many people will just decide to stay indoors and game. Whereas in California and Florida, the weather's always nice or usually nice, so you have that magnet to go back outside and not necessarily sit inside and play a game. So the Canadian population is highly representative of gaming. We're yet to see enough companies. I mean, a lot of the companies in this portfolio are driven out of Asia, and then the rest would be the United States and, of course, Europe as well.
Really interesting stuff. Raj, thanks for joining us today.
Raj Lala and Moolala.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And you're my hero. H-E-R-O is the name of the ticker. I love this story because even if you're not a gamer, you can profit based on your view that it may rise. Raj Lala was here to talk about that new eSport ETF. Stay with us. Coming up next on Moolala, we're going to talk to Robert Price. He is the founder and CEO of Bode, an online, low-cost online real estate platform based in Alberta. And we'll take Stephanie Wolf through the Moolala questionnaire. If you have missed an episode of the program, just go to our website, moolala.ca. You can click on the podcast link and find full episodes and segments. You can do the same at your podcast provider, too. While you're there, review the show, subscribe to the show, so the next episode will arrive right on your device. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Buying or selling a home can be a stressful and an expensive process. Lots of people, most people, choose to go through a real estate agent to make the process easier. But there's been lots of talk for years and years and years about a cheaper, simpler option. Now there is a new entrant called Bode. It is an online platform that uses technology to help you buy or sell your home without the use of a real estate agent. Founder and CEO of Bode, Robert Price, is here to tell us about it. He's in Calgary. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce.
You are based in Alberta. You are starting this business in Alberta. Tell us how it works.
Yeah, so the Bode platform, as you accurately described there, is about leveraging technology to create a robust experience for a buyer and a seller, two peers, to transact, buy and sell homes. So it is, as you mentioned as well, we don't have agents. We have a team that's focused on investing in technology and creating this fantastic experience for our customers.
There are a number of companies that at the surface would be quite similar to yours. There are companies like Purple Bricks and Property Guys. I've been covering those for years. How are you similar to those low-cost incumbents, and how are you different from those other names?
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do is take a step forward in terms of introducing some technology into this home transaction market. What we're doing is taking a leap forward and eliminating the need to have four people involved in a deal. I would describe these other providers as hybrid providers. They still have agents. They're just done remotely. So they have more like call centers as an approach to their customer experience. In our case, we go all the way to the end and say, we'll provide you with automated contracts, with the tools, the data that you need to be successful. We also don't, the way our pricing model works, you don't pay up front, whereas other providers charge for the listing. So in our case, free to list with us, and then you would only pay a total of 1% upon successful transaction, which is 75% less than the Canadian average of 4%.
So take me through the experience for a seller. I say I want to sell in the current model that most people use. I find an agent. They come to my house. They photograph my house. They tell me to move stuff or hide stuff or burn stuff. They price it for me. I go and have a drink in a bar. They hold an open house. Eventually, I get 15 offers that give me 30% more than I ever dreamed of. And then we're done. How does your process? And I pay a massive commission as a part of that. But many people would say that's worth it. How does your process differ from the perspective of the seller?
Yeah, so our process doesn't require that phone call or that in-person interaction at all. You simply go online, you go to our website, click list my property. It's a process where you'd identify specifications of your home, you'd upload your pictures and measurements, and then you click submit. I can do it in a little under 10 minutes. But the average person does it in 12 to 14 minutes. And then we will take your property and digitally market it to, so we put it on realtor.ca, we put it on Zillow, and on 20 other websites. But in addition to that, we'll actually take your specific listing and digitally market it using hyper and geo-targeting techniques to attract individual buyers to that home.
Could you send a professional photographer for me? My phone's not that great.
Yep. Yeah. So another part part of our value proposition is what we're building is the Bodiverse. We're calling it the Bodiverse, which is a curated professional marketplace of best in class providers, experts that you need through the process. So a photographer would fit in there. A lawyer would be part of that. Inspectors, appraisers, all the people that are experts that you need to be successful through the experience.
And how does it work for buyers? I mean, I think historically the commission tilt has been more on the seller side. So you can see how vested they would be in having that 1% versus, you know, 3, 5, or 7 or whatever it is. But what about for buyers?
So buyers, we don't charge anything. So we've unlocked we've unlocked the ability for a buyer to message directly with the seller, to schedule a showing using an integrated calendar tool, and quite uniquely, the ability to make a direct offer using a digital offer process. So you click a button, you're a buyer, you're able to specify, here's the price, here's the conditions, the deposit amount, attached, unattached goods, all the things you would typically see in a normal transaction, and submit that directly to the seller. And ultimately, at the end, pay no cost. We've simply unlocked that market or that functionality for the buyer market.
As I mentioned off the top, you're in market in Alberta. I see lots of properties in the Calgary area. I'm taping our show from Toronto, which has a very, very different real estate dynamic. How do you overcome the challenge for people who live in markets where bidding wars remain common? Because that would seem to be an enormous hurdle. There's an art and a science to pricing, but it seems like you'd be at an enormous disadvantage if you didn't know how bidding wars were working within your very specific region.
So Alberta is on the other end of the spectrum of Ontario, as you mentioned.
Yeah,
we have a lot of downward pressure on pricing, which makes our lower cost model more attractive. But then you flip it over to an Ontario type market, which can happen here as well as we boom and bust based on our energy based economy. Within that same scenario, where you're able to receive multiple offers and manage that all through the tool and decide which ones, at the end of the day, which one makes sense. We've built in some protection so that you can't accept multiple offers. But our belief is that this is actually a simpler process because you don't have four people involved in every deal times three deals.
Just got one more question before we go. This is sound like a very cynical question, and I don't mean it to be. How much runway do you have? Who's funding you, and how much time do you have? And the reason I ask is there have been many companies before you who have tried to make this model work, and their model wasn't exactly the same as yours, but it's not a new idea to try and provide a low-fee real estate experience. How much time do you have to make this a go?
Yeah, well, I would argue it is different, and it is a different time in the market. This is now a mature concept doing peer-to-peer business. It wasn't 10 years ago, and the technology hadn't got to the point where you get this end-to-end experience that we've invested in. But to answer your question directly, we're funded internally. We've got lots of runway. We've got a full board, a full executive team of experienced local and international executives that have built successful businesses. So we're off to a great start, and the runway is long for us.
And you yourself are happy to eat ramen noodles and sleep under your desk.
I like ramen.
Ramen's amazing. Are you kidding? It's the best. Robert, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Robert Price, the founder and CEO of Bode. It's a new real estate platform, charges 1% in total. And Price was saying it's all about the technology. Time now for the Moolala questionnaire. This is our series of questions about money, about how you think about money, your past with money, a little bit about life too. Stephanie Wolf is our guest today. She's a money coach and founder of Wolf Collective Wealth. That is very difficult to say.
It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. Stephanie, just the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
I'm ready.
How would you describe your money personality?
Slightly frugal.
Slightly. Okay, if your husband were here, would he include the word slightly? No. He'd say she is completely frugal. Where do you think that comes from?
I think it's actually from my upbringing. I actually didn't have a lot growing up, and so I learned how to make do with little.
What would be an example of that? Like, I remember my mom sending my sandwich in a rinsed out milk bag and being horrified that I had to show up at school with that. Did you have examples like that?
Yes, it was the watered down Kool-Aid. I was never privy to having
to a whole package.
Yes.
I do that with my kid.
I was never privy to having drinking boxes like the other kids. You know, it was either like a container. Just water or water cooling.
Who would you say was your money mentor? to have one? Are there things that you take away from your upbringing that you continue to use, that the functional ones, not the dysfunctional ones that I'm sure your husband would tell me about?
Yeah, I would say David Chilton actually is.
Yeah.
He's like the number one. He's the first book that I read, personal finance book I ever read. And that changed the course of my life.
Wow. How so?
Yes. The pay yourself first. With 10%, I think that was that hit home with me, and I think the way that his book that was written, the first book he wrote, was really inspirational because it showed me that anybody could actually build their wealth.
Yeah, I remember getting my copy of The Wealthy Barber at the Canada Trust branch at Oxford and Hyde Park in London, Ontario. So formative for me too. What is one thing that you still worry about when it comes to money?
I think it's about. It's retirement. Yeah. I think it's a big issue for a lot of people, and in myself included. I mean, you know, I've run the numbers many times. I'm confident that I'll end up on top, but it's still a concern in the back of your mind. You never know what the markets are going to do. You never know what's going to happen.
I only have one kid. You're diversified. You have three children. One of them is going to launch the next BlackBerry for sure. For sure.
Let's hope so.
What does financial freedom mean to you?
It's the independence to do what you want. I think with independence comes happiness, and that to me is true freedom.
When do you plan to retire, air quotes retire, and what will you do?
I don't think that I'm ever going to retire. I think that I will learn to enjoy things a little bit more.
Golf?
I might be,
you can take up golf?
Well, I do golf. I do
golf. You're set.
Do you
curl?
No, I don't curl.
You could take up curling and bridge. That's the holy trinity of retirement activities, or so I've heard.
I keep envisioning myself with this massive garden. Like, I'd love to be able
to
just get out there and garden all day, but it's time consuming, so you need the time for that.
If you landed an enormous financial windfall, I'm talking $25 million, what would you do with it?
Oh, Bruce.
I know. It's a tough question.
Definitely donate. I would definitely donate to charities and causes that I care about, because that's significant to me. And then I would likely invest a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yes, I would invest. That's actually what I would do first. So those are the first two things,
charity and investing. And what's your investment temperament? I mean, your corporate background has worked in financial services for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. What's your temperament when it comes to investing? Clearly low risk, because you're so frugal. Like, I can't invest in cannabis.
I'm frugal, but I actually do have a higher tolerance for risk. I think when I understand what the investments are, it's easier to make those choices.
If you could snap your fingers, can you snap, by the way?
I can snap.
Let me hit the snap.
Oh, that's good.
If you could snap your fingers and change one financial behavior in society at large, what would it be? Dun, 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 dun. You have a particular focus on women.
Yes.
And you have a deep passion for helping women get a better handle on their money. What financial behavior would you change?
I want women to know that it's not that complicated. Mm-hmm. That all they need to do is a couple of small steps and they're set for life.
All right. Those are the steps. Stephanie Wolf is with Wolf Collective Wealth. Woo! I said that. Okay. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Bruce.
That is our show for today. Subscribe to it on your podcast platform and write us a review. If you have questions or comments about today's episode, you can send us an email to ask@moolala.ca, moolala.ca. We can talk a bit about book club too. I'm sure you read fiction in your book club. That's what most people do. But how about changing it up and bringing some moolala into your life? You can find and order either of my two personal finance books online. You can also go to the library. That's a great place to get books. The first book is called Moolala, Why Smart People Do Dumb Things With Their Money and What You Can Do About It. And it has a whole thing on how to bring the book to your book club or any group and use those exercises with people around you. Thank you very much for joining us, and have a great day.